What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg. And today we got some stuff to talk about. Talk about Brian Keefe, officially named the 26th head coach in Washington Wizards history. We're also going to discuss Daniel Gafford, Kristaps Porzingis, former Wizards, turned starting centers against each other for the Mavs and the Celtics in the upcoming NBA Finals. Sort of talk about why I'm happy for those guys, but also the downfalls of the era with those guys and why other teams have been able to capitalize on their value, but the Wizards somehow weren't. And then also going to conclude it with some draft stuff, talking about how Sarr could possibly fall to number two, certain types of mock drafts that are mocking certain guys somewhere, who's getting mocked to the Wizards the most, and kind of dive into all that stuff real quick. So going to be probably a little bit of a shorter episode. There's not much going on, as you probably know, with the Wizards other than what I just said. So we're going to hit on those points, not, any really reason to drag it out. Going to get through them, and that'll probably be the shorter end of the episode. But first, I just want to dive into Brian Keefe. Look, if you missed it, it was reported by a lot of people. I think, I mean, Woj reported it, but like the Wizards also tweeted it out. So whoever wants the credit there, but Brian Keefe on, I'm recording this on Thursday. It'll be posted on Friday, but on Wednesday, Brian Keefe was officially named the 26th head coach in Washington Wizards franchise history, taking off that interim tag. Juan Suso Jr. obviously fired, deservedly so. Probably should have been fired a lot earlier, probably before the season. But at least they figured it out midway through. Fired Juan Suso Jr. On January 25th, and quickly named Brian Keefe, who was an assistant, interim head coach, and he took the reins. And look, I think Brian Keefe went 8-31 through his half of the season, which is abysmal. It's terrible. But what if I told you that not only is that record better than what the Wizards' record was before that, but he also had the guys playing the right way. And if you look at Brian Keefe and the record, obviously the fair weather fan is going to say, this guy went 8-31 in 39 games, and you're going to give him a contract to be your head coach. What are you doing? And to the fair weather fan, that's understandable. But that's why you got to watch the games. If you watched any of the Wizards games when Brian Keefe was coaching, you would see that from the time under West to Brian Keefe, the Wizards' defense drastically improved. Their effort and energy on both ends of the floor drastically improved. The usage of timeouts to stop runs drastically improved. The accountability improved. And the morale around the team improved. The respect level of the players that the players had for the coach, that improved. All of these things got better when Brian Keefe took over for Juan Suso Jr. And look, the Wizards are terrible. This roster is one of the worst in the league. And you can't expect to look at wins and losses for a guy like Brian Keefe and use that to determine whether or not he deserved another shot. Brian Keefe did everything he could to improve this team, to help begin that culture building and try to turn this franchise from a bottom feeder, a middle of the pack dweller, to someone that is consistently contending. And I feel like the steps that he made with the type of roster that he had, and the circumstances that he inherited, it was impressive. So again, that's why I'm stressing here it's the right hire. And look, when I posted this on Twitter, it was either, look, I understand, like this is the right hire. It's not flashy. It's not one of the big names like Bickerstaff or Borrego or Redick, but it's the right hire. And that's kind of the thing I got from Wizards fans that I'm sure watched the team from when they played under West in the first half to when they played under Keefe in the second and realized those minimal but big time changes. And then you look at the Fairweather fan who comes in here saying, who's this? Or why did we hire someone that I don't know? Or he went 8-31 and you're really going to hire him again? Oh, the Wizards keep getting the safe option. For those people, you clearly didn't watch the team under Brian Keefe. You certainly didn't watch them under Juan Suso Jr. because if you did, you'd realize that they could have signed a piece of, I'm not going to go there. They could have hired anybody. And it would have been an improvement. But nonetheless, that's kind of where I'm at with Keefe. It's the right hire. It's not the flashy hire, but it's the right hire. And also, for a first-year head coach, who really wants, like, you work your whole way up to from assistant, video coordinator to get on the bench to assistant and work your way up. and you sometimes only get one shot in this league as a head coach. And I don't know if you worked your whole life for this one shot. Is this situation right now that you're inheriting in Washington the one that you want? Like we've seen this in last cycle with Kenny Atkinson wins the title with the Warriors, and then he comes out and the Hornets are about to give him the head coaching job, and he takes it pretty much. And then he goes, I don't think what you're building here is sustainable. I think I'm going to be out in 2 to 3 years because this roster isn't manageable. I'm not going to take it. I'm going to wait for a better opening. And if I'm one of the coaches that is available, Borrego, Redick, now Bickerstaff, and some other names, the Lakers obviously is way more appealing to me than the Wizards. And that's the bottom line. Like there's other coaching opportunities too available right now that are better than the Wizards. And Brian Keefe obviously is the guy. For those saying it's the safe hire and it's typical Wizards, like, yes, I understand that. Like, everyone knew the Wizards, although there was four or five names, they knew they were going to hire Wes Unseld Jr. because his father is the greatest player in Wizards slash Bullets history. You knew they were going to take Johnny Davis 10th, even though a lot of people basically said, yeah, we know you're going to take him there. We don't think he's an NBA player. There's other better players, but we know that's the pick you're going to make. They knew every Wizards fan knew they were going to eventually trade Beal, but not when they should have, and they were going to hold on for way too long. There's so many typical Wizards. That's why there's the hashtag So Wizards thing. Like, and I understand that the Keith hire is that. Like, it's very typical Wizards to get this guy as the interim, even if he is 8-31 and there's other more successful names, like you go out and you retain this guy. Nothing even really leaks about your head coaching search. So is it like, did you really go out and do your homework, or was he the guy all along? And these are, I guess, fair questions, but I think this circumstance, the safe hire is the right hire. And I don't know if Keefe's going to be the long-term answer here in Washington. He might be a bridge coach, who knows, but I feel like he did enough to deserve a shot. The players clearly like him. I mean, look, Jordan Poole had a great quote about Brian Keefe at the end of the season. And I found this in the ESPN article, so just trying to credit it here. I don't know who asked him this question, so apologies if the credit's wrong. But Jordan Poole, after the season, when asked about Brian Keefe, said, Brian Keefe, he calls him BK. BK did a tremendous job. Credit to him for rallying our guys together through a long season, playing players to their strengths all across our team, and keeping guys together. He did a really good job of allowing me to play my true position and play more on ball. End quote. Jordan Poole's essentially saying, look, we had a tough year, and when Keith came in, he rallied everyone, he played people to their strength, kept guys together, and allowed me to play point guard, his true position, play more on ball. He's the reason that Jordan Poole was unlocked by playing him at point guard instead of moving him off ball like he's Klay Thompson and only shoots threes and doesn't have anything in his bag other than that. He's the guy that unlocked Poole. He's also the guy that unlocked Denny, because Denny was a lot better in the beginning of the season, but he was even better under Brian Keefe. More aggressive, more minutes, more touches. Just a more of a focal point offensively, instead of a guy that just was relegated to the corner while Kuzma and Poole did whatever they wanted. Like, Brian Keefe was integral in these minute changes that might not pop on paper because the Wizards' record was so bad. But again, to people that watch the team, and that's all I'm really talking to. I don't really have time for people that sit on the side and say, I'm not gonna watch. Like, let me know when the Wizards are gonna make a run, or wake me up from this like fandom when the Wizards are actually competent. Like, that's not who I'm talking to. I'm talking to the Wizards fans that rock with me and have watched a lot of games this season. Don't have to watch all, but a lot of them. You know that the Brian Keefe is the right hire. The players all love him. And you saw on Instagram, you got Denny, Bilal, Poole, Kuz, Tyus. They're all coming on here on Instagram and reposting it. Congrats, BK. Kuz had some really great words about Brian Keefe. Like, there is a lot to like here. And specifically when the players are that adamant that he's the guy and that happy for him and all that, like, it's nice to see that. I mean, Kuz said, happy for BK, was with me when I first came in the league, so I've seen his grind from the jump. It's nice to see that the players are also on board with Keith being a great hire for head coach. You always like to see that camaraderie between the front office and the players, where you get the guy that both of you guys want. You never want a head coach that doesn't align with the players. I mean, we saw it in Cleveland. Jay Bickerstaff's a great coach, but the player, there's clearly some friction there. And it seems like the guys just really like Brian Keith. I love the values he preaches. He doesn't take anything from anybody. When a timeout needs to be called after the team goes on an 8-0 run against you, he calls the timeout. I mean, literally his first game as coach against the Jazz outscored the Wizards 10-0 to start the game. Immediate timeout. After 4-0, timeout. Right after it got to that point, the Wizards turned it around. They lost the game, but he doesn't take the Wesonto Jr., all right, let them go on a 30-0 run, and then, yeah, you know what? I probably should have called a timeout earlier. Let me burn one now while we're down 25, and so I don't grow the lead to 40. Brian Keith's better at that. He's better at better defensively. He's just a better coach, and I think he's the right guy. Safe hire, not flashy. But I Brian Keith is the guy that for the job. It's pretty obvious, but he is. So that's the first thing I wanted to talk about. And now I want to move on to something a little more. It's not necessarily strictly Wizards, but it is prevalent in today's time, and that's the finals. Daniel Gafford and Kristaps Porzingis have made the finals in their first year after leaving the Wizards. For KP, it's a year. For Gaff, it's 3 months, which is crazy that Daniel Gafford has gone from 9-44 in February with the Wizards to an NBA finalist with the Dallas Mavericks in the span of 3 months, really. I can't tell you how happy I am for a guy like Daniel Gafford. Was one of the best players on the Wizards for the last 3 to 4 years he was here. Honestly, probably the most consistent Wizard during his time here. Just a great guy as well, great human being. I only went to like 3 or 4 games to cover them in person, and I talked to Gaff every game. Always answers questions. Always so genuine in his answers. Always, just seems like he's so well liked around the club. Top to bottom. So it's great to see that that level of success for a guy that really played for the Bulls and Wizards and saw minimal to no success in terms of the playoffs, but was always a solid player, solid human being. It's great to see someone like that go from a bad team and a bottom dweller to the NBA Finals that quickly. And now more people are starting to recognize, like, oh, Daniel Gafford, like, where was this on the Wizards? Daniel Gafford has been like this. It is, it's crazy for people that say that. It might have something to do with going from Tyus Jones and Jordan Poole to Kyrie and Luka throwing you lobs and you setting screens for them. It's a bit different when you go from two pretty solid players to two future Hall of Famers, first ballot at that Hall of Famers. Like that's a bit different. And that's why Gafford has elevated his game, but he's always been like this. And that's kind of what sucks because the Wizards get very little media coverage. The media doesn't really care. It's got people like ESPN and Bleacher Report, they're more focused on what Bronny James' workouts look like than how certain players on the Wizards are playing. But at the end of the day, Daniel Gafford's been like this. He was like this his whole time with the Wizards, and it's just kind of nice to see him get the love and get his flowers and hopefully go out there and win a ring for the Mavs. And then you look at the other side with Kristaps Porzingis, a guy that really had a career, reinvention in Washington. After getting traded from Dallas, people were like, ah, is he kind of on the outs? Like now he's getting moved off a Mavs team that was built kind of around him and Luka, didn't work. What's he gonna do in Washington? Well, he goes out and has a career year, and the Wizards don't make the playoffs, and it's not his fault. A lot of injuries, bad roster construction, bad trades. That's kind of what happened last year. He was the Wizards' best player in 2023, but it was never gonna work out timing wise when the Wizards decided they were gonna trade Beal. You're gonna also move on from KP, and it was just so happened that Boston made the right move at the right time. Completely stacked team. Their roster is unbelievable. And it's still to be seen. Like, obviously, the Wizards getting back not a lot for KP and Gafford. Right now, it doesn't seem great. I think if you combine the packages for Kristaps Porzingis and Daniel Gafford, the Wizards got back the 26th pick in the draft, which still to be seen. Rashawn Holmes, who's probably going to be gone after this upcoming year. Tyus Jones, who also could is an unrestricted free agent, could walk for free. Danilo Gallinari and Mike Muscala that were eventually flipped for Marvin Bagley III and 2 second-round picks. So you got a late first-round pick, 2 second-round picks, Marvin Bagley, and then Tyus Jones slash Rashawn Holmes that'll probably be gone soon. Same with Bagley. So not a lot. Very underwhelming. But KP was going to walk anyway, so you'll take what you can get. And I talked about this in the last pod. And Gaff, look, by the time the Wizards were going to be good in 3 to 4 years, he would have been an unrestricted free agent. And yeah, you could have signed him, but it would have been for a lot of money, and you never know if he's going to come back. So as for as many of the Wizards fans that are going at the front office for trading these two guys, not getting much in return, like this happens on NBA rebuilding teams. Like, you're gonna have to move on from certain guys that don't fit your timeline, that you don't necessarily want to spend big money on. Because right now they can help contenders, but picks and the young players you get in return, those are more valuable to a team like the Wizards, than a team like the Mavericks, who clearly had a need at center for rebounding and defense and got the perfect fitting Gafford. So you can sit here and dwell on, oh, the Wizards didn't get a lot. I'm going to choose to say it's still to be seen. The Wizards had to make these moves, and I'm just happy for these guys that they're thriving and could win a ring. Again, I try to be the most optimistic person I can be in life, and as a Wizards fan, that's all I can really do as a Wizards fan. But I'm going to take the optimistic approach and just kind of be happy for these guys. And you also can't forget Markieff Morris. Big, big piece in the Wizards' success from 2014 to 2017 with the John Wall, Bradley Beal teams. Started at power forward for all of those years, and was that kind of enforcer, 3-3 point guy that held the team together. So really happy for him. He won a ring already in LA in 2020 in the bubble. But this would be like his first real ring. I mean, obviously, like, he did win a ring, but the 2020 bubble is a lot different. And he didn't play with the Lakers. He's not playing with the Mavs, but he's a vet presence. Like, every person on the team means something. So it'd be nice to see Keith get a ring too. But what I do want to talk about with this is, like, it shows in Gafford and Porzingis making the finals right after they left the Wizards. Like, the problem with those 2022 and 2023 teams under West that greatly underachieved, it wasn't that the players weren't good enough around Beal. It was that Beal wasn't good enough to maximize the players around him. And look, the best player on your team is supposed to make everybody around him better. And I feel like Bradley Beal never did that. And it's not his fault. It's Tommy Shepard and the front office's fault. You built around the wrong guy. You didn't build the wrong team. You built around the wrong guy. And until they had realized that, they were never going to win. And look, when you look at the teams around Beal for those 2 years, they kind of went all in. Like, your starting five was Dinwiddie, Beal, KCP, Kuzma, and Gafford, with like Montrezl Harrell coming off the bench, obviously a young Denny Avdia. Your team wasn't that bad. And I'm not saying you should have won a ring with that team. But number one, they should not have been broken up at the trade deadline if you had actually managed your locker room the right way. And they should have at least, maybe made the playoffs, but at least the play-in game, not been outside the top 10 in the Eastern Conference with the talent that you see on that squad. And then you move on from KCP in one of the worst trades ever to get Monte Morris, a career backup point guard, and a 30-plus-year-old Will Barton that was out of the rotation 10 games in. And you rolled a still competent team of Monte Morris, Bradley Beal, Kyle Kuzma, Daniel Gafford, and KP as your starting five. And you got Denny and Corey coming off the bench. You've got a solid squad. And yet you underachieve again, and you miss the playoffs, the play-in as well, altogether. Like, the talent that was on these teams has gone off and been integral parts of big time playoff runs of championship teams. And yet, when they're with the Wizards, they don't see that type of success. They don't see any success at all. And it's because you built around the wrong guy. It's not those guys. I mean, Kyle Kuzma won a ring with the Lakers in a pretty similar, like, he had a bigger role here, but not by that much. Like, he was supposed to knock down threes, play defense, and kind of be a third piece, like, bigger role, but but nonetheless, he's a championship type player when playing in that role. You got a guy like Gafford moves on automatically in the finals after 3 months. KP on automatically in the finals. Like, Boston's a great team, but it just kind of goes to show KCP as well. Like, when guys move off the Wizards, they seem to find success. I've never seen a team help other teams win more rings than the Washington Wizards. It seems like every single year, the team that wins the finals has a former Wizard on it. And a lot of those times, that former Wizard is an integral part. It's not like Markieff Morris, where he's just kind of on the bench and there just happens to be a Wizard that rides the wave to a title. Like, it's usually an integral part of those teams. And look, the history backs it up. This is now going to be the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is now going to be the eighth NBA finals in a row featuring a former Wizard. And it's also guaranteed to be the eighth finals in a row where a former Wizard wins it all, wins a ring. If you go back, it goes back to 2017, where you got Sean Livingston, JaVale McGee, huge, huge pieces coming off that Golden State bench. They win in 2017 and in 2018 with the Warriors when they go back to back. 2019, Jody Meeks, CJ Miles won it with the Raptors. Like, look, these guys weren't integral parts of that, but like they're still on the team. They're still former Wizards moving on, winning a ring pretty much right after they left. I'm pretty sure Jody Meeks was on that 2018 team. Same with CJ Miles. And then you move on to 2020. You got Markieff Morris, Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee winning rings with the Los Angeles Lakers. 2021, Bobby Portis coming off that bench for Milwaukee was kind of that key piece to bringing that team together along with PJ Tucker. He wins a ring after leaving the Wizards. 2022, Otto Porter Jr., Chris Chioza win a ring with Golden State. Chris Chioza didn't play. Otto Porter Jr. was huge off that bench, though, for the Warriors. 2023, KCP wins a ring with the Nuggets right after he got traded from the Wizards. Thomas Bryant's first year with them. Ish Smith, first year with them. They all win a ring right after they leave the Washington Wizards. And then, look, you move on to this year. Chris Porzingis is going to win if Boston wins. Daniel Gafford and Markieff Morris are going to win if Dallas wins. It just kind of seems like every year a former Wizard is an integral part in the winning side of the NBA Finals. And it's the Wizards. Like, when you have a team like this, you see it a lot with the Redskins or the Commanders. Like, there's just certain things when your team is in poverty, like, that just happen. They're like funny moments. You know, all the stuff that comes out all the time with the Commanders when they had Dan Snyder, like, oh, it's another thing to compound on everyone making fun of this team for being a bottom dweller and being the laughing stock of the league. Like, that's just what happens when you go through years and years of making, like, you have good players, but you fail to build the right team around them to get this far and win a ring, and you can't maximize their value. So you move off of them, and right when you do that, other teams are just magically able to, like, snap their fingers and use that guy the way that he should have been used as a part of how you were using him. And it's just kind of the way it's been going for the Wizards. You know, they haven't sniffed the finals since 78, 79, and a lot of their former players seem to get right back to the finals when they leave Washington. So hopefully that's something that, I don't want to say that stops. Like, I always enjoy seeing guys that I rooted for and I really enjoyed watching have success like this. You know, like, I'm not jealous that Gafford's in the finals or Kate. Like, I'm happy genuinely for them. I felt bad for them when they were unbelievable for the Wizards and just weren't seeing any type of success. But I do hope that the Wizards eventually get to the finals instead of just watching and rooting for former Wizards. That's kind of my point here. But to move on past that, you got to kind of take a look at the draft now because it's less than a month away. By the time this is posted, it's 26 days away on June 26th and 27th. It's a 2-day draft this year. But look, there's only so much you can talk about with the draft because I'm not no draft expert or guru. Like, I had Bum Pfeiffer on a couple weeks ago. If you want to listen back to that, he's very knowledgeable. The last one I put out was with Matt Bodurno, another very knowledgeable person when it comes to the draft. But what I can tell you now is, look, I tweeted out 2 days ago There's two things that are going to happen that I'm pretty sure are going to happen with the Wizards over the next month or so. And I didn't put any sources because I don't ever claim to have sources. I have zero sources. My sources, the fact that I watch every Wizards game and I've been a fan of this franchise for a decade plus now, and you just kind of know when things are going to happen. And I tweeted out on Tuesday, Brian Keefe's going to be named head coach of the Washington Wizards. And the Wizards are going to choose between either Alex Saar or Zachariah Risacher, whoever falls to them, with a second overall pick. These are just things that I can't tell you, like, oh, well, a source has told me that this is going to happen. Like, I don't know for sure, but it makes sense with all the reports and with all the knowledge that one can gain. Like, Brian Keefe was just the hire. Like, it was known. It didn't even have to be reported. It was known. And it seems like from all the mock drafts, from all the buzz around the league, like, it's Saar and Risacher. And it's just down to, like, who Atlanta takes. Because whoever they don't take, I think, is going to be a Wizard for the next couple of years. And based on, honestly, a lot of the mock drafts that I've been seeing, Bleacher Report, ESPN now, I think, they both have Alex Saar falling to number two. They have Risacher as the number one guy going to Atlanta. And they have Alex Saar falling to Washington number two. And look, I think this is going to be the case. I think, like I said, I think it's either of those guys. But I don't think I care. Like, I'm content with either of them on my board right now. I have Saar at one, Risacher at two, Castle at like 2B. Like, I like Castle on that same level as Risacher, where most have Risacher higher. But again, I wouldn't mind any of those three guys. However, if Risacher goes, like, here's how I'll explain my thought process. Like, if Saar goes one, I don't care if you take Risacher or Castle. I would be fine with either of them. But if Risacher goes one, I'm taking Saar over Castle, if you understand what I'm saying. The reason I have Saar that much higher than Risacher as well as Castle is fit. And look, it's completely contradictory to what I've been saying the last month about when you're rebuilding, you never draft for fit, you always draft for best player available. But this is one of those weird circumstances where Saar is both the best player available and the guy that fits the Wizards the best. So you're not drafting for fit, you're drafting still the best player there. It just so happens that he's the perfect fit. And that's why he's one on my board. The Wizards have probably the biggest glaring hole at center of anybody in the league. And you know, that you can roll out Marvin Bagley and Rashawn Holmes next year. You could do that. That's fine. You know, if you're tanking, that's a great center tandem. But I'd prefer to pick Saar. Saar would start day one. Instead of having Risacher come in here as, you know, a, what is he, 6'8", 6'9", lengthy forward, whether he plays the three or the four, he's gonna be sitting behind Kyle Kuzma and Denny Avdia. Like, I don't think Kuz is gonna get traded before the deadline. I think Kuz is gonna play at least half a season again in Washington. And then you still have Denny Avdia, who's playing the three. Like, Risacher doesn't start day one. And Denny's gonna be here for the long haul. And I don't know about Kuz, but he's still gonna be here for a little while. He's 3 more years on his deal. It's better for the Wizards for them to take Alex Saar, for him to fall to them at two, than it is for Risacher. It gets a little more complex with playing time, with when do you trade Kuz to eventually give that four spot to Risacher. It's weird. In terms of fit, Risacher doesn't necessarily fit, I guess, what the Wizards have right now. But nonetheless, like, if they have two, I'm still taking him. Like I said, I don't care about fit as much. It's just Alex Saar is literally perfect. He's the perfect player to draft for the Wizards. If they had won, it would be him, clearly, I think, over Risacher. But because it's Atlanta, and it pisses me off that it's Atlanta. They did not deserve this. They had one of the worst front office moves of the last couple of years, trading all that for Murray, knowing that you already have a point guard. You're just pairing two true point guards, ball dominant guys together, because Murray was like the last possible all-in guy, and they didn't want to wait again to get a guy next to Trae Young. Like, they didn't deserve to get bailed out like this, but they did. And that's why it's a bit different, because I think one of Murray or Trae Young, excuse me, will get traded before the draft. And you're still going to be drafting for Atlanta. Do you draft for fit, or do you draft BPA? I think BPA is Alex Saar. But they also already have Capella that they're paying $20+ million per year. They have Okongwu, who they I think just gave a rookie extension to and is making decent money. Like they don't necessarily have a place for Sarr. And yeah, you can play him at power forward, but you have DeAndre Hunter and you have a guy like Jalen Johnson. Like you have forwards. I don't see him fitting there. Whereas a guy like Risa Shea could start for them at three or, play really big 6-man minutes. Like it's just weird, a weird fit for Sarr. And I think they're gonna be Atlanta's trying to win now. They're a team that will be drafting more so for fit than BPA. And that's why I think you're seeing a lot of these mock drafts have Risa Shea go one. Because look, Risa Shea might be the best player and he also fits Atlanta the best, so it kind of makes sense for them to go there. It could also be me trying to will Alex Sarr in my own little way to Washington because I think he just fits what the Wizards are building so perfectly. I think he's the best player in this draft class. And I just, Risa Shea going one would be the perfect draft for the Wizards. You could draft anybody at 26 and 51. If you land Alex Sarr at number two, I don't care. It's perfect. Insert him in day one, starter, should be your guy at center for the duration of this rebuild. That's how I see him. And that's kind of where I'm at with the draft. We could talk more about like 26 and 51, but it's more difficult to talk about that range because in a draft that's so polarizing, you don't know who's going to be there at 26. Like I could tell you, I really like a guy like Tristan Da Silva from Colorado to be drafted at 26, but he could also go in the lottery and he could also fall to like 40. Like it's just hard to talk about those picks without knowing who's there. I'll have more analysis on draft night. Like when we get to 20 to like 24, 25, and there are certain guys, I'll post like these are the five guys that I really like in this range that I think the Wizards should be targeting. And that's kind of what I did last year. A lot of people, I got great reviews about the draft coverage last year, so gonna do the exact same. I'm not gonna switch it up. Do the exact same thing right after the Wizards draft the player. I'm gonna post a profile that I already have uploaded and ready to go. Just giving you size, skill set, averages, all that type of stuff to keep you guys informed about the draft. Because it's gonna be fun. This is the Wizards Super Bowl. The first part of the Super Bowl, the first half, that was the draft lottery. It's a coin toss. It's like if you just threw like $50,000 on heads and you actually hit heads. Like it was nerve-wracking, but it was just the beginning. What you actually have to perform at isn't that luck aspect, it's the draft. That's the Super Bowl. And that's why you tank. And the Wizards rebuild is gonna try to be built through the draft. And that's why it's so important what you do there. And that's why, it sucks to have two and not get to decide. You have to wait to see what Atlanta does. But I'm telling you right now, if I had to pick who I think goes number one, as of now, I think Risa Shea does. And that's a little biased, obviously. Like I'm gonna keep this between whoever's listening, but like I do want Alex Sarr. But I do think Risa Shea for the time being goes one. He just fits Atlanta the right way, and I think Alex Sarr falls to two. But I just rambled about that for like 2 more minutes than I had to. That's kind of all I got here. There's really not much other than that going on with the Wizards. No need to kind of drag out and talk about stuff that, if I don't really care about any of that, like no one here listening is going to care about the other stuff that I could talk about, but that's the most important stuff. Just a housekeeping note, Brian Keefe's introductory press conference, is scheduled for this Tuesday, June 4th. Will Dawkins will also be speaking at the presser. I'm going down to DC for Bullets Forever, so really excited about that. Really appreciative of Albert Lea and all them for giving me the chance to do that because it's one of the coolest things ever. Living out my dreams like this. But if you guys have anything you want me to ask new head coach Brian Keefe, if you want me to ask anything to general manager Will Dawkins, you know where to find me. Shoot me a DM. I always respond to whoever sends me a DM. You guys know this. So if you have any questions that you want me to ask those guys, shoot me a DM. Let me know. And I'll be sure to do my best to ask it. I don't know how many questions. Sometimes they're like, you get one or two questions and then you got to shut up. So that might be the case. But if that's the case, then I'll ask your questions over mine. So feel free to shoot me a DM. And look, that's going to do it for this episode. Appreciate y'all for listening as always. Go Wiz.